So our little display is complete. We'll talk about it in just a moment. At the end of the summer, we turned our attention to the last sentence in our new purpose statement. Remember it? If not, let me give it to you. Our purpose is to give glory to God by meeting people where they are, sharing Jesus with them in a meaningful way, and encouraging them to live in a growing relationship with Him. And well, what we've been doing, whether you knew it or not, is we've now spent 16 weeks with another 5 to come talking about your growing relationship with God. And just to kind of give you the quick recap, remember we started with I choose. And we discussed 4 very important choices you must make if you are going to live in a growing relationship with God. In case you missed them, they go like this. Purpose over popularity, surrender over control, discipline over neglect, important over urgent. 4 choices. When we were done talking about those 4 choices, we then worked on the idea of a prayer relationship that you must have if you're going to live in a growing relationship with God. You can't be done. You can't live in a relationship that you never talk to the person. I know some of us would like to try that sometimes with our kids or spouses at points, but it can't be done. A relationship requires us to communicate, and prayer is the way God has chosen for us to communicate. Now, next week, we're going to start a brand new sermon series, and it's called Selfie-Centered. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about how to refocus our lives into a growing relationship with Christ. And well, what we've been doing for the past month is we've been talking about this idea of I quit. And the I quit goes with the display and the things that we've been adding around the sanctuary to kind of get the point across that there are some things that we must quit if we're going to live in a growing relationship with Christ. We learned that we must quit making excuses. We brought in the white flags, the idea of surrender. We learned that we must quit complaining. We brought in the ducks that seem to always quack. And we learned that we're not supposed to be complainers. We learned that we must quit living in fear. And so we brought in the little boxing gloves and we took a round with Rocky there. We learned that we can't live in our fear. And we learned last week that we must quit squandering. We loaded up the windows with money. And all of this is about living in a growing relationship with Him. And as we've gone through these sermon series, there is a word that I hope you do see because I have been emphasizing it. And if you missed it, the word is must. Just want you to understand, this is not an option list where it's multiple choice. This is not a wish list. This is not a nice-to-have list. Let me just be very blunt with you. If you call yourself a follower of Christ or a Christian, but these are just sermons and not life decisions, then what you have is a label, not a relationship. If you're not taking these sermons and you're not wrestling with them and trying to put them into your life, then what you have is a label, not a relationship. So perhaps you should go back and look at the notes that you took, maybe re-listen to a sermon or two, and begin to ask yourself, who am I in this relationship with Christ? But when you ask, remember, you must. You must. So that brings us to the video clip that I showed you at the beginning in Buzz and Woody, and honestly, my kids are wondering, Dad, what took you so long? I'm about to finish my 8th year here at this church, and if you just do the math, that means we're talking about 400 sermons, and this is the first appearance of Buzz and Woody. And if you're thinking, why is that just strange? Well, if you have no idea who those characters are, you have my deepest sympathy, because you have missed one of the most endearing stories that you'd ever want to see when it comes to what it means to belong. And, well, in this clip that you just saw, Buzz and Woody had found themselves in a very difficult situation because they are in Sid's room. Now, if you don't know who Sid is, it's really simple. Sid is a child that likes to torture toys. Hence the reason Woody is trapped in a cage and Buzz has a rocket strapped to his back because his intent is to destroy them. But you do understand, they don't belong to Sid. You see, they ended up in this situation because of actions that was happening into their life. And as we began to eavesdrop into their conversation, we began to realize that Buzz and Woody both have the same problem, with different symptoms. And it's a problem that all of us tend to have also. See, as we begin to listen to their conversation, Buzz is all upset. Well, why is he upset? Well, Buzz Lightyear is an action figure, but he has now just discovered he's not the real Buzz Lightyear. He thought he was the real deal. He just thought he was Buzz Lightyear. He spent the entire movie trying to convince everybody, I am the real Buzz Lightyear. The problem is he happened by a television commercial, and he saw himself being advertised. And so now he's all distraught because he's not the real deal. And the funny thing is Woody is the veteran of Andy's room. Woody's been around since Andy was in kindergarten. He's a very old toy. He's a hand-me-down. He actually came from Andy's dad. And Woody gives a very nice speech about the value of being Andy's toy. But did you notice what happened as he began to talk? And he talked, and he talked, and he talked. And then he realized, well, I'm just an old toy. I can only do one thing. I don't have all your cool gadgets. I can't glow in the dark. I only get to say one thing. I don't have all the stuff that's out there. And Andy and Buzz both come to the same conclusion. Why would Andy want to play with me? And do you see what's happened? Buzz is comparing himself to the real Buzz Lightyear. Woody is comparing himself to Buzz. And they both feel unworthy to be in a relationship with their owner, Andy. Folks, that'll preach. And did you notice the solution to the problem? The screen wasn't really clear, so maybe it was a little faded for you. How did Buzz finally figure it out? He looked at the bottom of his foot, and what's written on the bottom of his foot? Andy. The name of his owner. Probably thinking, so what are we quitting today? Well, I quit comparing. It's the only way it works. I have to quit comparing my life. And just so we have a firm definition, compare means to estimate, measure, or note the similarities or dissimilarities between at least two items. And you know what? Something inside of us just wants to know, am I good enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I smart enough? We have an insatiable desire to be told we are. We want to know that we are accepted and that we are loved. And so that I can feel this, I begin to compare. What do I begin to compare? Well, I begin to compare possessions. I look at my car versus your car, my house versus your house. I begin to look at my clothes versus your clothes. I begin to look at the things in my life, and I look at the other things that people have, and what do I decide? Well, if their stuff is better than mine, then you know what? I must not be very worthy. And if my stuff is better than them, then I must be blessed. We compare appearances. We look at other people and we decide, well, I like their nose. And you know what? They have a really good pair of six-pack abs. Or you know what? They must do this. They have really good biceps. Or they're very strong. Or we like the way they look. They have nice flowing hair. We like their appearances. And we begin to compare those various things and decide whether or not we're worthy. We begin to compare performance, job titles, who you married, who your husband is, where you came from, mom, dad. We compare all those things. And then we begin to compare our circumstances. Kids or no kids? How sick am I? It's one of those things I'm noticing as I hang around my parents now, and they're in their 80s. I can pretty much count on when I go there, I'm going to get a play-by-play of all the doctor's appointments they've been there since my last visit, because we talk a lot more about being sick. I think it's just part of getting older. But we like to compare, well, you know what, I've gone to this many doctors versus this many doctors, and we compare these things. We just can't help ourselves. Because somehow in the middle of all this comparing, you know what I'm looking for? Value. Worthiness. And you know, Jesus tells us that, well, it is very dangerous to compare. He warns us against this idea of comparing. This is what it says in John chapter 21, verses 19 through 22. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper, and he said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You, here's our word, must follow me." So this is one of those key points in Peter's life, because we are post the denial of Christ. Matter of fact, we're post the crucifixion. We're post the resurrection. This is Peter's first face-to-face meeting with Jesus since the denial. And Jesus had just finished up laying out this long little mission statement about how Peter is supposed to go forth and feed the sheep and feed the lambs and feed the sheep. And he's supposed to be doing all of these things. And then he tells Peter, by the way, your life is going to end tragically. And Peter takes all this information and he does what we would all do. He looks around, he says, "Oh, what about him? What about him? Has he got to suffer the same kind of death? Has he got to do the things that I got to do? Has he got to go feed the sheep? Is this all on me? What about him? What about him?" And he begins to compare himself to John. And I love what Jesus said. "It's none of your business." That's essentially what he says. You don't worry about John. You worry about Peter. You worry about what it is that you have to do. You find your value in what I've given you to do. Don't compare yourself to John, because John's mission is my business, not yours. You just kind of get focused in on what you're going to have to do. Now, I'm supposing you're wondering, especially after Gary kind of touched on this in Sunday school, what about Paul? Because Paul tells us we're supposed to compare. 2 Corinthians chapter 8:8 says, I am commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnest of others. Keep in mind, Paul was not asking them to test their situation, not testing their status symbols. What Paul is doing is they've got a commitment issue in Corinth, and he wants them to test their personal commitment and to compare it to the commitment around them. See, he's not asking them to compare their situation to find whether or not they're worthy. He's asking them to compare their situation to figure out whether or not they're following. You see, when we're trying to get our worthiness based off of the other person, this person that's sitting next to me, see, who I pick all depends on how I want to feel. If I want to feel unworthy, who do I pick? Somebody that I would esteem better than me. Their clothes are nicer, their car is better, their house is bigger, their things just measure up better than what I would make happen. I want to feel good about myself. What do? I pick somebody that I think is less valuable than me. That's the way we do it. See, that's this idea of comparing. And when you do that, there are some dangers in comparing. And this is going to be the Buzz and Woody story. The Buzz and Woody story is the fact that I want to rewind the movie and I want to go back. No, we're not going to watch the Toy Story. That would have been fun, but we're not going to do that. But I do want to rewind the movie, and as we walk through the movie to figure out how did they end up in Sid's room. They didn't volunteer. Trust me. They say, "Take me to Sid's house," because they knew what happened. How did they end up there? I want to rewind the movie, and I want to walk back through, and as we are walking through this movie, we're going to find out some things about when we compare what happens to our life. What are the dangers that are out there? And the first thing that we find is, well, comparing is the death of contentment. Woody's life was perfect. He had been the center of Andy's room, and even the room was decorated in a cowboy theme. He went everywhere with Andy. He never left the house without him. He had a special place in Andy's room, right there on Andy's bed. Everybody else got stuffed in the toy box on the shelves, but he had the prime real estate position. Enter Buzz Lightyear, and well, he was a gift from Andy's mom. The moment he arrived in the room, Woody was pushed from the bed and ended up underneath the bed with all of the dust bunnies. He told himself it was just a phase, that he was still Andy's favorite toy, to give it time, everything will get back to normal. But as time passed, Andy's room began to transform. Down came the cowboy pictures, and up went the Space Ranger pictures. Off came the cowboy comforter, and on went the Buzz Lightyear comforter. Woody found himself being left behind. He started spending his nights in the toy box, while Buzz got the cushy position on the bed. He was afraid Andy was going to forget him. You see, the problem is Woody forgot his purpose. I mean, it was great. I loved the speeches. He was always giving toy speeches about how they were there to please the kid, how they were there to be there for Andy. And it all worked okay as long as Woody had his own special spot. As long as the song that was being sung was "You Got a Friend in Me," and the songs that he knew, Woody was all good. Funny how it works out. The second it was time for Woody to step back and take a different role by mentoring the next generation, well, he began comparing how he thought things should be versus how things actually were. And well, Paul tells us that we got to watch out about this, because in Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13, we see, "I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living or in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who strengthened me." Paul makes it pretty clear that comparing circumstances will lead to us feeling sorry for ourselves. It will lead to us getting frustrated. It'll lead to us losing our focus. Paul tells us that there is a secret to overcoming this, and it sounds a lot like Woody's speech. I can do all things. Funny, like Woody, all things usually includes the things that I want to do, the things that benefit me, the things that please me. You see, the secret to contentment, the secret to ending the comparison, is you stop finding value in who you are and start finding value in who made you, who owns you. Now, comparing also has another side, we'll call it benefit or circumstance. Comparing can make us prideful. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." Adding to Woody's frustration is the fact that Buzz Lightyear didn't even want to be Andy's toy. He was obsessed with fixing his spaceship, which is no more than a cardboard box, so that he could return to his life that really didn't exist. You see, Buzz was very proud of being a space ranger. And in the commercial, when he saw that commercial advertising him, you know what? It wasn't just the fact that he wasn't a space ranger. You know what he saw in the commercial? Rows and rows and rows and shelves and shelves and shelves filled with Buzz Lightyear. So you know what he learned? Not only am I not the real deal, I'm not even unique. I'm just some mass-produced commodity that's put out there for the consumption of kids. And well, when he began to look at his life, Buzz didn't like this. As a matter of fact, he even convinced himself that it all wasn't real, and he tried to fly, and so he jumped off a set of steps and he broke himself. The truth was is that he was already broken, because Buzz has decided in his own heart, you know what, if I can't be the real Buzz Lightyear, I don't want to be anything. C.S. Lewis wrote it this way: "We say that people are proud of being rich or clever or good-looking, but they are not. They are proud of being richer or cleverer or better-looking than others. If everyone else became equally rich or clever or good-looking, there would be nothing to be proud about." So this idea that I can look and I can compare myself to somebody else, it gives me this basis to say, I am somebody. I am something. And now you know what I've done. Look at me. Look at me. I'm here. I've arrived. Look at me. That's what this comparing is really all about. And the problem is I continue to look, and I continue to look, and I continue to look, and I continue to compare. Eventually my comparison moves on from just making me prideful. It makes me resentful. Now, how did they end up in Sid's room? Here's the funny part of the movie. It all started when Andy's family was going to be going to Pizza Planet. And Andy's mom told him, you can only take one toy. Who's he going to pick? Honestly, who's he going to pick? He's going to pick the newfangled, shiny, glow-in-the-dark, it talks, it makes the cool whoosh helmet statement. Right? He's going to pick Buzz Lightyear, and Andy, and what are you thinking? man, I sure would like to take another trip. So Woody hatches a plan to make Buzz temporarily unavailable. The only problem is in the middle of the plan, it all goes sideways and Buzz ends up going out the window. The other toys in the room are horrified, and it forces Woody to come up with another plan, because now, and he does get to go to Pizza Planet because he's the only toy now there, so he gets picked, but he can't enjoy the whole trip because now he's got to make a plan about how is he going to fix the issue that he's created. Interesting enough, Buzz survived his fall. He catches up with Woody and Andy at the Pizza Planet. They begin to argue, and now they both get separated from Andy. And when we find them in this little video clip, Buzz is strapped to a rocket for destruction, and Woody is trapped. Man, can you not feel us sometimes in this situation? Because I am resentful and because I am comparing my life to everybody else, then you know what? I just want to be first. Just once I want to win. Just once I want to be the person at the front. And so I make this plan and I hatch the plan, and the plan goes sideways, and well, I end up in perilous situations. And well, you know, there is actually a biblical Buzz and Woody. We call them Saul and David. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 6 through 9 tells us a story that looks very similar. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyous songs, with trembles and lyres. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Saul was very angry at this refrain, displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Saul was king. He had a castle. He had a palace. He had everything. He had people serving him and waiting him. And what could he only think about? David. After all, those people said that I only killed 1,000, and David killed 10. I should go down in history better than David. You know, the sad thing is, if you go through and you read the second part of Saul's career as king, it's tragic. Because he spends the entire rest of his life trying to hunt down David instead of being the king that God wanted him to be. He ends up tying himself to a destructive rocket of comparison, trying to be better when he already was exactly who God created him to be. And tell me we don't get caught into this. We look at what somebody is doing in their life and we just want to be upset about it. I wonder how much ministry to the lost gets pushed out the window, just like Buzz, because we're busy living in comparison, battling over what we want instead of what God commanded us. You see, this comparison thing is serious business, and we have to quit, because ultimately comparison makes us divisive. A verse we seem to run across a lot, James chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. "What causes fights and quarrel among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill, you covet, but you cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and fight, and you do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you have on your pleasures." So here's Buzz and Woody, and they're trapped in this room. And it all could have been avoided, couldn't it? I mean, if they had just not compared themselves to each other, if Buzz had just decided, you know what, I'm satisfied with being a toy because, you know what, I'm loved by Andy. If Woody had just decided in his heart, you know what, I had my day on the bed, and I understand Andy is changing, and maybe I need to take a different role in Andy's life. I can't just always be the person in the center of attention. Sometimes things just change. And while I don't like them, sometimes I have to allow them. Otherwise, it begins me doing the most dangerous thing that we do. We compare this day to what? The good old days. We're not the only ones in the Bible to do that. The Israelites did that. Every time they got into trouble, you know what they wanted to do? Compare themselves to when I was living in Egypt, how things were, how good things were. They forget they were slaves. You see, this idea is we must quit or we're going to end up trapped and destroyed. God tells us this. George MacDonald, one of C.S. Lewis' mentors, put it this way: I would rather be what God chose to make me than the most glorious creature that I could ever think of. For to have been thought about, born in God's thought, and then made by God is the dearest and grandest and most precious thing in all of thinking. See, we have to figure out, we're valuable because of who we are? No. Because of what I've done? No. Because of God. So maybe we need to follow the words of Samuel Johnson, and we need to understand that people need to be reminded a lot more than they need to be instructed. I don't need to give you a lesson on how not to compare. You already probably have the answers. It's all about focus. But I do remind you that, you know what? Remember what you have. Look at your life. How much has God blessed you? And I'm not just talking about the car and the house and the relationship. Look at your life, folks. We celebrate communion. How much has God blessed your life? He was willing to die for you so that you could have this relationship. And then remember who you are. And not who I am by my last name, or not who I am by where I live, or not who I am by where I graduated college or my job title. Remember who you are and find your value in your Creator, not others. This is what Psalm chapter 129, verses 13 through 16 says. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body, and all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. I find great calmness in that verse. You know why I can't compare? Okay, a lot of you are going to be thankful for this. I am unique. There is not another berry like me on the planet. And again, many of you are thankful for that. But you know what? I am unique. I can't compare myself to Gary because you know what? We're different. Gary is unique. Marty is unique. Steve is unique. Sherry is unique. Nancy is unique. We're all unique. We can't compare ourselves because God put us together differently. You were made by God. Now think about that for a second. God is perfect and God doesn't make mistakes. And therefore, if you were designed and made by God, nothing about you is a mistake. Everything in your life, God put there for a reason. And he saw the finished product before you even began to live your life. It says he ordained your days. So this is what I want to do as we close this service this morning. I want to remind you who you are. And I know you're all out of blanks, so you can put your pens down. You can just look at the screen. Because I just want you to remember these 12 significant things about who you are. You are loved, according to John chapter 3, verse 3. You are accepted, according to Ephesians chapter 1, verse 6. You are a child of God, according to John chapter 1, verse 12. You are joint heir with Christ, according to Romans chapter 8, verse 17. You are a member of Christ's body, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 27. You are a saint, according to Ephesians chapter 1:1. You are redeemed and forgiven, according to Colossians chapter 1, verse 14. You are complete in Jesus Christ, according to Colossians chapter 2, verse 10. You are free from condemnation, according to Romans chapter 8, verse 1. You are a new creation because I am in Christ, or you are in Christ, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. You are chosen of God, holy and dearly loved, according to Colossians chapter 3, verse 12. You are God's workmanship, according to Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. What else do you need to compare? Do you not understand just how valuable you are to your owner? How do I quit? I start living my life for my owner and not myself. Did you not notice that with all of these I quits? I quit making excuses. That means I need to put my excuses to the side. I quit complaining, so I have to put my opinions to the side. I'm going to quit living in fear, so I have to put my fears to the side. I'm going to quit squandering, so I have to put my habits that I put for squandering and wasting my resources to the side. I'm going to quit comparing, so I have to put my value to the side and focus it on God. If you wanted to sum up this little display and we wanted to say, what must we quit? I must quit me. You get it? I must quit me. This can't be about me. As Woody told Buzz, and we'll hear this again, if you want to go get the four movies and put them together, this theme keeps coming up and up and up and over and over and over. You belong to somebody. For Buzz and Woody, it was Andy. And the moment they looked at the bottom of their boot and they saw Andy across their foot, you know what? I'm valuable not because I can do a good trick, not because my helmet goes whoosh, not because I can talk, not because I'm old, not because I'm young. I am valuable because for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in me shall not perish but have everlasting life. For God loves me. That makes you valuable. And you are valuable enough that God was willing to say you are worth dying for. So what do you need to compare? You are uniquely loved by the creator of the universe.